Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 35 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with my good friend Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome.
Sarah and I are going to be talking about something today, and I can't remember the exact working title, but I want to say it's Stuff, Junk, and Things. Is that
stuff,
right, Sarah?
Junk, and Things. And stuff. That is a direct quote from our listener who posed this question. So thank you, Kate, for titling this episode for us, because it's a great little catchphrase. Stuff, junk, and things.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the things, the stuff, the clutter, the junk, the toys, and all the accoutrement of family life that can sometimes take over and feel very overwhelming. But first, we're going to do a semi-irregular segment. And this one, we're going to be talking about products that we're either recommending or just find intriguing. Sarah, I'm going to let you go first on this one, because you have one that I know a lot of people was on a lot of people's wish list this year. I feel like this really broke out this year.
This is the breakout year for the robot vacuum. The Roomba was on my radar for several years, and I feel like, I don't know this for sure, but I feel like it got a little bit of negative press for being, you know, very expensive and maybe not all it was cracked up to be. And I think a lot of new technologies start out that way, right? Like, it seems like a great solution, but there's more kinks. And so I feel like this is the year that maybe we've reached that tipping point where, So anyway,
I think it used to be one of those things like fancy people had, or like it was a, not even a luxury, but sort of like a, just like silly.
Right. And then sometimes I definitely remember hearing that it was not as effective as it was cracked up to be. So then it's very expensive and also not effective. So anyway, for Christmas, I actually received 2 robot vacuums because my parents and my husband did not chatter with each other about who was getting what.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
We returned one, obviously, but we got the Nido, which is not the Roomba. I feel like Roomba obviously has the highest brand recognition, I'm sure, market share. But Brian is kind of a research. He likes to research technology and electronics. So he did a lot of research. And I think for our home and for pet hair specifically, and for a few other reasons, Roomba still gets great reviews. But the Nido, so it's Nido BotVac, and I will link to it. They actually have several models ranging in price, but ours is at the higher end. It's so funny. It like will send you notifications on your phone while it's working. So it'll be like, I'm stuck, or like, please, you know, please, I'm going back to charge my battery, or like, you know, please remove me from the corner or whatever. Actually, it doesn't get stuck very often. It's very smart. It learns your floors. And I put a little video. I'll have to put that in the show notes on Instagram of it, like tootling around my floors. So I will say the thing with a robot vacuum is you still got to pick up your CRAP crap before you let it loose, which is perfect for what we're talking about today, because I feel like half of the battle in doing my floors is picking up all the stuff off the floor to be ready to vacuum or sweep or whatever. So
does it pick up dog hair pretty well?
Yes,
it does. That would really be the big thing I would be
for. And that's one of the, I think that was one of the decision makers. It's also D-shaped instead of round, which means, I don't know like the details, but it can go.
Feels like it can get better into little nooks and crannies.
Little nooks and crannies, which means you don't have to pick up. You know, there's a couple tables that I move away from the wall a little bit. Like, I do a little bit of prep for it, but it really is pretty good. And it's very smart in that it learns your corner. So if there's a corner that it kind of like gets stuck in the first time, it'll learn that next time. It's
pretty
cool.
It's very cool. What was the price point on it?
I think it was $6.99.
Okay.
My parents had gotten me the Roomba, and they'd also done a lot of research. And again, I think that's a great product. And I think the one that they got was in that same range. But I think both have different models, depending on what you need. Just like a KitchenAid mixer or something. Yeah. You can like do the high end. So.
And now you just need a cat that can ride around on it.
Yeah, exactly. Or like a stereo. Well, that was in Parks and Rec, where he put his little Bluetooth speaker. Funny. So it was like a little mobile stereo that moved around. Anyway.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, so that's the Nido. That's my robot. And
oh, you have a robot now. How cute. Well, the reason I decided I need a robot is because the kids for Christmas got a BB-8, the little Star Wars robot.
Right. And which is what we named our vacuum.
Oh, that's hilarious. Awesome. Well, So William took some pictures of it, you know, flying around the floor, and Instagrammed one of the pictures. And I was horrified by how dirty my floors were.
Yes.
So one robot led to me now wanting another robot.
My floors show so much. They're really beautiful.
Ours too, but they're shiny and like everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Darn dogs. Anyway. Okay. So mine isn't exactly a product recommendation. In fact, I find this, it's so funny how the timing of this stuff sometimes works out. But last night I posted, I'm sure everybody listening has heard of the book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo. Marie Kondo. I have been hearing so much, you know, I'm always kind of skeptical. I tend to be a little bit of a contrarian, and I've heard so much about this book since it came out. And I have not read it, but last night I posted, you know, I wouldn't say super critical Facebook status, just kind of like, I don't get it, you guys. From what I've heard about it, I don't go into people's houses and see clutter all that often. I feel like most people I know deal with their clutter pretty well, at least on the surface. Now, that doesn't mean it's not lurking around in closets and that. And I know everybody has places in their houses that they could clean and stuff like that. Of course, I absolutely do. I'm staring at one of those places right now. I just feel pretty content. So I kind of posted the status like, I don't get it. You know, most people I know who aren't either moms with little kids who are, you know, strewing toys literally everywhere, or who aren't like hoarders of a certain age. I tend to find like the retirement age hoarder thing is like a thing right now. But I just doesn't feel like a big problem. And man, it was one of those threads that really kind of blew up. People are really into this. So I feel like now I have to read it and be more fair.
I think you should read it, but I don't think you'll change your mind. We're going to, it's funny because we had this slated and our sweet listener, Kate, sent this in, and we're going to stick to her question, which really is separate from the KonMari Marie Kondo book. But it is so funny, the timing, because we were going to talk about this and then you had a Facebook debate about it. I actually have read the book. And in a minute, I'll tell you my reaction, but you should read it, but I don't think you'll change your mind. I think you'll hate it. I mean, just my personal.
Okay. Well, I think it was, you know, a lot of people had really good points to make about emotional attachment to stuff, which I know isn't exactly what we're talking about today, but sometimes I think with little kids and their stuff, like the emotional attachment matters. I think I had more of that in my younger years. I've moved a lot and that's made me much more ruthless. Now, truly, if I have clutter I haven't gotten to yet, it's because I just haven't gotten to it yet. It's not because I can't throw something away or whatever. But what someone, a commenter said in this thread, which you might not have missed because it was like buried.
Yeah.
She said something like, you know, walk into the room and look around at the things you don't like or you don't care about. What is the vibration of your heart doing or something? And I'm like, this is not speaking my language. So if the whole book is like that.
Lot of it is. Okay. So I'm going to tell you my reaction to the book because it's really funny. And listeners, it's a fast read. So even if you think this isn't going to be life-changing for you, it's such a fast read that it's just interesting to see what everybody's talking about. But my experience reading the book was I had like a violent hatred of this concept for most of my reading of the book. I mean, it's translated from another language. So there's a translation gap, I think, in the reading of it. There's a huge cultural gap between living in big Japanese cities. There's a major gap in the fact that she did not have children. She actually has a baby now, but did not have children. And most of her clients did not have children or had like one child.
Okay.
So there's always all of these huge gaps that just made, and then it is rather dogmatic. It's a little bit extreme. So I kind of like hated her. I don't mean that personally, but just like really felt fired up. But here's the big but. I would find myself later in the day, I read it in like two or three sittings, it's very short, thinking about one or two things that I think are really powerful. So I have a very strange reaction to it. It did not change my life. I don't think it's magical. And like you, I'm sort of always a little suspicious of like wide sweeping trends. I think you and I are the same that way. However, as much as I didn't like reading it, there are like two or three little things that I'd come back to later in the day that I thought were interesting and thought provoking. So it's kind of worth a read for that. And I would bet, Megan, that you'd have something similar where there'd be one or two things conceptually, and then the other 98%, you just want to like throw it into the fireplace. And I know, people I love and respect who seriously die by it, you know, like loved it. So it's so interesting.
Well, and I think that we all do have different levels of emotional attachment to things. And sometimes it's the things we have to get rid of. And sometimes it's the reason for buying things and, you know, why we hold on to things. And so I don't discount any of that at all. It just kind of struck me from what I've read that probably wouldn't sit that well with me, but I will give it a shot now just because you recommended it, Sarah.
Yes.
And I do everything you tell me.
It's such a fast one. So listeners, if you have strong opinions one way or the other,
we want to hear about
just
it.
Just leave us a comment at themomhour.com on this episode 35. And we want to hear. I will say one more thing on that is that, you know, obviously you do a lot of purging, especially in your clothes and closet. And that was probably where, if I applied any of this, it was in my own wardrobe. I mean, the rest of the house is like a lost cause. It was not going to go Marie Kondo. But I actually, like, when the weather turned colder a couple of months ago, I was like, where is that shirt or sweater? And you know how they always say, all like purging experts will always say, like, you'll never miss it. If you haven't worn it, you'll never miss it. I definitely got rid of a couple of things that I missed after reading that book. Not really missed, but it was so extreme that I'm like, hey, where'd that shirt go? Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So this episode is I'm calling it the non-KonMari method for dealing with loads of crap year after year. That's my subtitle.
All right.
So I'm going to bring us back to Kate. And Kate sent in this question to us a long time ago, 4 months ago, maybe. So I'm happy we're getting
it. It was buried under a pile of stuff, Kate. Sorry. Yeah,
it was in the clutter of my email. And she was so sweet. She wrote us a really nice, I'm not going to read her whole email, but she said, I have an idea for you. Stuff, junk, and things. She said, I had a writing teacher in middle school who would not let us use those words because they are so unspecific and vague. That phrase perfectly describes the tidal waves of stuff that enter my house with every holiday and birthday. I kind of loved that setup because it's so true. Like, it just, in parenting, and she has a three-year-old, so that, especially with toddlers and preschoolers, it just is a tidal wave of stuff. And it's sort of, you know, you just lose control of, you know, liking everything in your house or having everything have its place. And there's an element of kind of surrender, I think, that we'll get into that. But anyway, Kate's specific questions, I think, were really, if I were to summarize, were really, number one, how to kind of minimize the intake. Like, not, you know, she talked about very generous grandparents and wanting to give a lot of gifts at birthdays and holidays. And I can relate to that because I had the first grandchildren on both sides and have very generous three sets, and it's very similar to Kate. So how to kind of minimize or manage the intake, and then how to purge, like how to get rid of stuff when your kids get attached to it, and then how to organize what you do have within the home. So those are, I mean, we could write a book about that, but those are, I think, some of the things we're going to touch on today.
Yeah.
So thank you, Kate, for the question.
Thank you, Kate.
We love listener input. So let's talk first about kind of the intake, like minimizing if that's what you want to do, or managing how much crap gets it. Can I say crap on this show? I've already done it.
I think it's pretty
not going to get us.
That's a PG word.
That little E.
Yeah. Yes.
There's no other word. I mean, stuff, junk, and things really equals crap.
Crap. Yeah.
All right. So I think you probably had a different experience than me with the like generous grandparents and loads of gifts at birthdays and holidays.
Yeah.
But this is something that we definitely have been blessed with, I will say. Mm-hmm. And it does, I think there's something that feels like it's a little bit out of your control when it's just being stuff that's being given to your kids. And the one thing I will say to Kate is that gets a lot better as the kids get older. And there's a certain part that will just resolve itself because number one, toddler and preschooler toys are big in size. They're getting things like trikes and ride on toys and push toys, and they're big and plastic. That goes away really fast. Toys get smaller, physically smaller. They also get more expensive, and grandparents just peter out. There's more grandkids that get added to the mix. The kids' interests go to things like art and books and Legos. So, I mean, I don't want to say just stick it out, but in a way you can kind of stick it out because the just sheer volume does, I think, in most families resolve itself.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because they go like Jacob's first maybe two birthdays and Christmases.
Right.
He was the first grandkid on the in-law side. And it was just a flood of stuff. And man, that has really slowed way down. I mean, they do go through, everything's huge at first, like you said, things then get smaller. For a while, they get like annoyingly small.
Yeah.
especially with girls. I don't know what it is with girls and tiny, tiny little toys. With boys, like, the tiny toys tend to be Lego and it all just goes in one place. But with girls, it's like everything is tiny.
And
it's 8 million different types of tiny things. So that's continued to be, you know, a little bit of an issue. But it does change a lot. And I would say my boys' rooms now, the youngest boy being 10, they are Spartan. Like, they hardly have any stuff.
Yeah,
because everything is just sort of like one unit, you know, it's like there just isn't, I don't know, it's just not the same as it was. So yes, that definitely does.
The gift giving frenzy, I just think calms itself down. People are so excited and generous. Grandparents are so excited to give, and baby toys are kind of fun and it's like so easy to buy.
And they're not expensive.
It's easy to buy them without asking for a lot of input. As the kids get older,
there's a lots of selection and and they're not super expensive. So
right, exactly. Yeah. So as the kid, so that part solves itself, I think, if you just wait a little bit. Kate did say that she's asked for no gifts at friend birthday parties, which I think is a great strategy. We've done that on and off. It depends on how big the party is and how close the friends are. But asking at least for certain groups to do no gifts, I think, is a great strategy for some people, especially if you have a small home or.
Yeah.
And then she mentioned that she sometimes feels sad that they don't buy a lot for her child from mom and dad because they know that there's already so much coming. And I can really relate to that. And I think in my early years as a parent, I felt that a little bit. I would give all the ideas to the grandparents and then I'd be like, well, I'm not going to get them anything else. I know how much they're getting. And I think I've just let go of any emotions about that. The kids are so happy with their gifts.
And they don't know.
I get to love them in a million other ways. Right. They're not keeping track of, like, what did mommy pick out? And I think on, like, really small holidays, like a little Valentine something or an Easter basket, I then get to have more fun picking out one little thing.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So those are the things that Kate said she's already doing that I think are good strategies.
You know, one thing I did, I'm going to say up until like definitely at 3, maybe even up till 4 or 5, you can almost kind of see, like you can see as your kids are, if there's just a glut of gifts, it's just way too many, you can kind of mentally start taking stock of what's going to be the thing that they're going to really want to play with and what's the stuff they're going to forget about. And I remember very clearly like making 2 stacks of gifts, in any obvious way, not in a way anyone would notice, but I would like take, you know, it takes an hour to get stuff out of the packaging anyway. So I picked the one that I knew absolutely was a go. That was going to be like the big exciting gift. Start taking that out of the package, kind of shove everything else behind the couch or whatever. And then I would often do, those are the re-gifts. Those are the ones that you just go in the closet and you pull them out on a birthday or something. I mean, there's just, you're not obligated. And I know this sounds really ungrateful and terrible, but you're not obligated to throw every single gift your kid gets into rotation right now.
Right.
Maybe there'll be another time later in the year when, you know, that toy could be like a rainy day surprise or maybe.
No, I think that's a great strategy.
Yeah. So
keeping it going. Yeah.
Yes, that's absolutely. You can, I think you have the right to be a little selective about what you unwrap and throw in the toy box today.
And if you have relatives who are open to ideas, I think it works differently in every family, but if they really are genuinely asking for what the kids want or what you guys need, and mine have been so great that way, guide them toward more expensive. I don't mean that in a bad way, but fewer, like less quantity and more quality. I've always asked for things that like, I think, gosh, that's kind of a lot. I use the Magna Tiles example in our holiday gift episode, which we'll link to because that's some good toy ideas, but they are intimidatingly expensive, but they last forever and the kids play with them every day. And so I'm much more, if a grandparent is asking, and I think sometimes the grandparents like the idea of giving a lot of, you know, quantity.
Yes.
But if you can steer people toward quality and score yourself some really long lasting, beautiful products, number one, they tend to look better. You feel really good about, you know, your kids playing with them year after year, and it minimizes the number of, you know, the amount of stuff. So not everybody's open to those kinds of suggestions or even, you know, has the budget, but if that's an option, you know, say, look, we know you love to give. This is something that we're not able to spend the money on right now. But if you're, you know, if you're up for it or if you'd want like to go in on it with the aunt and uncle, then we'd love that. And that way you're getting one big thing instead of 20 small.
For sure. I have 2 comments to make about kids who are getting older. So I'm thinking like 5, 6, 7 and so on and so forth. One thing that we found really helped was to limit the number of systems that we sort of invested in and then ask people to like chip in on that system. So what I'm getting at is like, I'm not going to have my kids collecting both Lego and that other thing that's like Lego, but it's right. not, you know what I mean? Like, right. or if they're into building sets, I'm not going to have them into two different, like the robot right. one. And like, right. you got to kind of pick something and go with it.
Yeah.
Because if people don't know that your kids are really into one, they'll just buy like a starter kit right. from something new. Right. And now you've got two. And where are you going to put the second one? Yeah. The pieces don't interchange. Right. They don't right. work together. So I think it kind of early on, it's yeah. not like you have to make a choice about your kid's toy future, but I think early on, like what you did with the magnet tiles and we've done mm-hmm. with Lego, you just kind of got to like, you kind of got to commit
yeah.
to one or the other. There's nothing worse than having two kinds of building sets yeah. that both look a little bit like Lego, but aren't both yeah. Lego yeah. get mixed up on the same table. And then the yes. kids don't find out
yeah.
until later that, excuse me, none yeah. of the pieces fit each other. So it's just one comment. Not really for little kids, but it can be, honestly, even Duplo. I mean, yeah. there's knockoff yeah. brands of Duplo that don't yeah. fit Duplo.
And that goes back to, too, giving the feedback. If people are open to feedback, yeah. don't feel bad about saying, this is what we've got our eye on. This is what yeah. we'd like.
No, totally. The other thing that I have been very clear about, and I do it in a really joking way. So it's not, I mean, I'm not like, you know, like some kind of dictator sending out, you know, some kind of demands about what kind of gifts you can give right. my kids. But when people have asked me, I've just said, like, please, please, please do not buy them those fakey science kits. Please don't do it. Right. Those things are like, you know what I'm talking about.
Right, well, Sarah? Explain. I mean, okay. I'm sure I do.
The ones that like are first way overpriced and you open them up and it's like a different little package of each little powder and then like, you know what I'm talking about? There's
yeah.
like a tongue depressor and like maybe some kind of powder you mix with water and it turns into some kind of adhesive or something, whatever. Yeah. It's always like, it's like a volcano kit.
Yeah.
So right. it's like a $25 volcano kit where everything's individually packaged and they can't do it without supervision because you have to literally open the packaging for them.
Or like with the girls, I feel like we had a couple years ago with like make your own lip gloss and make
yes.
your own.
Oh, yeah. Those have always been a disaster. I remember the year that we got an ice cream making kit and it took all of the men in my family like taking turns. So like my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, my husband, and all the boys who were bodily abled yet
right.
to crank this thing for an hour and they got like a scoop of ice cream out of it. And I thought, okay, it was funny. It's like a funny family memory, but right. it's just junk. It went in the trash yeah. because we're never going to do that again.
Right.
And I'm never going to buy all the powders that have to go with it and stuff. Right. I just feel like those gifts are super fun to buy and they seem really fun to give. And the kids always go, wow. And
yeah,
then...
it is. It's a good wow at the opening.
But it never really pans out. And those become clutter because you don't want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because they seem like something, you know what I mean? They seem right. like something you don't want to just throw away.
Right.
But then they never really get used, or they do, and they just make a mess. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm unfairly biased, but I have a big problem
with
those.
I'm the same way. And actually, one of my last points for the kind of managing the intake that I had written down is that just beware of anything, and this is really exactly what you just said, beware of sets that have to all stay together in order yes. to be fun, or yeah. that only work when all the parts or pieces or batteries are there.
Yes.
So in other words, you do not want to spend the rest of your year with little kids coming up to you and saying, do you know where the little disc that goes yes. into this projector
yeah.
goes, or can you change the battery so that this works? You're not going to avoid this 100%, but if that can be only 10% of your toys and yep. not, you know, 60, it will just save you just, you know, hassle.
Yeah. Totally agreed.
So
should we move on to the next,
yeah,
the next question?
Let's do. So let's talk about purging.
Okay.
And this is a big one. We're going to skip the KonMari method because you could read the book for her method. But my first tip on purging is ignore the advice that tells you to involve your kids as a way to teach them.
You don't want
to
involve your kids.
Don't involve your kids as a way to teach them altruism and donating things they no longer use. They are not developmentally capable of that until they are, how old do you think, Megan?
Oh, like
10?
Well, I mean,
14?
Yeah. Older. First of all, they might feel the altruism. They might know in their heart it would make someone happy to give them something. And I'm not saying kids under that age, you know, eight or
right.
maybe eight, are yeah. unable to sacrifice. It's just that they literally, to them, it's so overwhelming. And every time
yeah.
I've ever handed my kid a bag and been like, you know what, go through your stuff, pick out what you really don't need or you want, and we'll give that to someone that's going to make them really happy. I've ended up with a bag, like a huge trash bag with like two gross stuffed animals the dog chewed up at the bottom. Like that's...
Yeah.
I mean, that's what your kids will do. It's not, they're not selfish brats. I mean,
no,
they're not incapable of empathy. It's not that.
They're just not ready.
They're not ready.
Do not involve your children. Instead, sneak around the house when they're at school or sleeping and be ruthless. It feels so good to do that. I mean, I feel like the Grinch, but in like the most satisfying way. But then here is my one strategy. Keep it in the garage or basement or somewhere for like a couple weeks and see if anybody notices.
Yeah.
Because that way you have the chance if they really are. I'll never forget one time we had friends come over and it wasn't even one of my kids, but the little girl was like, "Where is that big giant stuffed rainbow snake?" And it was one of those really bad stuffed animals from like a Chuck E. Cheese, but it was really big.
Yeah.
And she remembered it. And I was like, oh no.
It's
in the Goodwill bag.
That's so funny.
But the Goodwill bag was still in the garage. So like give yourself whatever. And don't let that become permanent clutter, because eventually you do have to just Goodwill it.
I put it right in the back of my car because honestly, yeah, I won't get by Goodwill for a week or two anyway. And that gives me kind of a natural buffer. But right. I will say that rarely happens. So I try not to worry about it too much.
Right.
Like that's kind of one of those fluky things, like you getting rid of a sweater and then realizing.
Yeah.
You
it's like, oh, well.
That sweater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
right.
I mean, I just usually play dumb, like, oh, I don't know where that is. I better just keep looking. Like, Violet's still asking about a book I got rid of like 6 months ago. And she'll still be like, where's that book? I'm like, I don't know. So don't involve your kids. Just sneak around. They'll be ready. They're, you know, you can work on their empathy and altruism in other ways.
Exactly.
And then my other thing there was if you aren't ready to purge, just at least rotate. Like I rotate a lot where I move toys that were upstairs, maybe toys that were in their bedrooms downstairs to our living area or vice versa. And they play with them more and differently, or they'll find new ways to combine, you know, a couple different building sets or something. So that's a good way to shake things up. It also kind of helps reveal if they really are still playing with stuff and maybe it was just too far away or if they really aren't. So if you're not ready to purge, rotate. My other one.
You know, you mentioned when you were talking about your Neato, the need to sweep before you use it. And I remember watching my sister, she really taught me how to be ruthless, was when her daughters were in the Polly Pocket phase, and her daughters are both adults now. So this was, you know, maybe 10 years ago. And she would sweep the floor and just throw everything she swept up away. Because there was so much of it. I mean, it was there were shoes and purses and little tiny coats. And like every little kit was, you know, $3-4. It wasn't a big deal to eventually buy more. But it was like you could just tell she made sort of that, you know, that mental decision, that judgment call in the moment. Like the life energy I will expend picking the little pieces out of the dustbin and then finding a place for them is not worth it. Nope. There they go. And the kids never notice. I mean, there's a million. Those things come with a million pieces. Yeah. So I'm kind of the same. If it's something like really important, I'll keep it. But most of the time, if something is kicking around on the floor and no one even notices, no one's going to know if it goes in the trash. So,
agreed.
Yeah. And it can be fun. I kind of get a kick out of throwing things away when no one's looking now.
Yeah, no, I totally do. That's what I said. I'm like the gleeful Grinch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is hard. And here's, I'm going to say something about good old Marie Kondo in right now about getting rid of stuff. And one of the little nuggets that I took away that I think is a good philosophical one is when you do feel like you're holding on to something, either because I'm going to need it in the future or there's an emotional attachment, her advice or her, what she says is to separate that thing having done its job or served its purpose already, which that's where the emotional attachment is, right? Like using your example of the science kits or your make your own lip gloss, the excitement of that was the person who got to pick it out, the child opening it with a big smile, the glee of opening up the little packages. Those things were real and they have already happened. It has already,
it's been
spent. It has already served its purpose. And of course she gets really like philosophical and kind of Eastern about it and wants you to like thank it for its service. But that I actually really like that because if you can do that, it separates. I don't feel bad about throwing this away because I've already had the experience of what it brought me. And I know that sounds a little woo woo, and it is. But it was helpful to me because it really allows you to be a lot more ruthless because you can say this sweater has served its purpose. I loved it. I wore it for 5 years. It no longer has that purpose. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense to me.
I think that's a good thing. If a little tidbit from her for purging is just to be like, this did its job and its job is done. So the Polly Pockets were part of the excitement of getting it and opening it up, and they have served their time.
You know, something that struck me when we were talking about holidays, this is not just always your own kid's birthday, but we've talked before about goodie bags, right? And I know you have an extreme hatred of them.
I do.
So my approach to the goodie bag now is like I let, you know, it's only really Clara now getting goodie bags.
Right.
Oh, and every now and then I'll go to a party when they have them, but most of the kids have aged out of that. But I will let her eat the candy out of it immediately.
Okay.
Like right away, because there's usually not that much, like two or three pieces. Then I take the pencils out because I am a pencil hoarder, because with five kids in the house, I feel like we just need lots of pencils. And then I just trash the rest when she's not looking. And it's never, it's just never been a thing. Like, I don't know. Like, they think it's fun. Like you said, just to get it. It served its purpose. Like, they got the bed. They got to dig through it. They saw there was some fake teeth in it, or like a a ring or whatever. If Claire was really attached to any of the things in that bag, she would have taken them out already and done something with them, you know? So it's, she's more attached to the whole.
One more layer of that, because I do have, Reed in particular is especially attached to stuff and has like true anxiety about getting rid of stuff. He's better. But they each have a drawer or a place in their room that they call their special drawer. And I started this with Reed when he was like 3 or 4, because he would, like, he had like pre-hoarding tendencies. And I know that I've talked to other people whose kids do. And so I just say, go put it in your special drawer. And the special drawer is just a drawer on the top of his dresser where I don't have to look. And the truth is, when the special drawer is full, he has to look in there and realize that there's a bunch of stuff he hasn't cared about in a long time. But at least gives him a little semblance of control back.
Yeah. No, I like that.
And so then I don't have to look at it. And so that specifically, like, especially birthday party, goodie bags, anything else, rocks he collects, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then he feels like he's in charge, but it doesn't end up being the miscellany, the...
Yeah,
the,
no.
You know.
Claire has the same... She has like an area. She calls it her crafting area. Uh-huh. And it's just kind of like a little nook of our... This kind of useless sunroom that we have that doesn't really serve any other purpose. And she's got lots of like little... Like I loaded it up with baskets and tins and stuff. And so when something like that, I'll say, you know, if there's something out of this you want, go put it in your area.
Right.
And it goes, and I don't know her system. I can't figure it out. I'm sure she has some system.
Right.
And there's little bits of like Play-Doh things that she's made and let dry out and stuff. I just don't even like, I try not to be at all attached to that area. That's her area.
Yep.
Yes, it's in the living area of our house and people see it, but it's very obviously a child's area. There's like drawings and art everywhere. I mean, no one's going to walk in and be like, gosh, Megan's a slob. Like, why is her Play-Doh everywhere? So I just try to remove any anxiety I might have about that space, because it's not my space. It's not really my business, you know? So that does help as well. She likes things. She likes things.
And kids can start to do that when they're very young. So if it's becoming your clutter, make it their clutter and give them a place to put it, you know? And eventually they run out of space, and they, with the distance of time in between, they realize they don't really maybe need it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about purging. Which I, would you agree is kind of like, it's never perfect. There's no perfectly, there's no perfect purging schedule. It just has to happen, right?
Well, like, and that's the thing. The other thing I really want to reassure moms, especially of young kids.
Yeah.
And we've said this a couple of times in different ways, but it really won't stay like this forever. You, when your kids are really little, you're sort of, first of all, they are making messes all around you. They're every time you put stuff away, they take it back out. You have to invest so much time and energy just in caring for them. And there's just, it just doesn't leave a lot of space in your life for creating this, like, you know, it's okay not to be a total minimalist and for your house not to look like, you know, like, like a Zen magazine article or something. It's
and
just,
I also want to say, it's also okay if that's hard for you, because I did notice in your Facebook debate conversation, I think there was like kind of two kinds of people almost, like people who really struggled with clutter or mess or however you want to call it. And they weren't hoarders, but just where it felt stressful to them. And I would put myself in that category. And so while we're, you know, giving cheerful, encouraging advice to Kate and these other people, I just want to acknowledge that it is really hard for me. It's like up there in my top three struggles as a mom. And I'm not saying I need to do anything differently about it, but just accepting it and living in the mess and living with myself in the mess and not letting it be, you know, really a problem for me mentally is hard. So
I get
just acknowledging that, you know, is okay. It, it's, if that's not easy for you, you are not alone.
And I think that also there are ways to even kind of, because I don't love being in a, you know, a really messy space either. If there's a lot of clutter in a place, I'll just kind of start avoiding that area of the house.
Right.
So one of the strategies that I've talked about for a long time is just making sure that if there's areas that I am going to occupy a lot or they're important to me, those are the places I focus first.
Yeah.
And even if that means ignoring a kid's room.
Yeah.
I will ignore the heck out of a kid's room because it's not a place, you know, unless it's like a baby's room that I have to go in every day. It's not as important to me as making sure my dining room table isn't covered with stuff.
Right.
Which is a problem. Like, John does computer work, and there's a bunch of tiny little screws and screwdrivers and little pieces I can't even identify. A little hard, tiny little hard drives and stuff. They're all over the place, and I have to get on him to like, you can't. This can't be on my dining room table.
Right.
You
right.
have to find your own place for this, because that's a place I need to have clean. My kitchen counters have to be cleaned off. Like that stuff. I think that's okay. Like, to kind of have your sanctuary, your trigger areas, whatever you call them.
Yeah.
If your bed has to be made, or your, you know, bureau has to be cleaned off, like, it's okay to prioritize those.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that can kind of be like a little, like, you walk in and look at it and go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can deal.
Yeah. With and it just takes time. I feel like it takes time to figure out where your tolerance is. I think I tell myself a little bit of a baloney story sometimes, that I'm okay with mess because that's my reality. But in fact, I think it'd be better for me to acknowledge that I'm not okay with it and put a little bit more intention into fixing it. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
so you have to find where that place is, where you don't feel like you're a slave to an unattainable perfection, but also that you are taking time for the things that are important to you, cleaning wise or clutter wise. Okay. So, okay, well, that was a little philosophical interlude. I want to finish up maybe the next 10 minutes or so by talking about just little strategies for organizing the crap that is in your house. So let's acknowledge that some is going to come in. We've talked about sort of like the floodgates and maybe ways to control a little bit or manage what comes in, and about getting rid of stuff when it's time. But let's assume that there is a certain amount of crap that will be part of your life for many years. And so little tips for organizing. So I have a few, and I know that you do, even if you haven't written them down, just because you've been managing a home for a long time. So so I guess the first thing I wanted to bring up is that some people choose to have like dedicated play space, like a basement or a playroom, or have the toys in the kids' rooms, and other people kind of integrate toys and stuff and kids stuff into the rooms of the house. I know it depends on your home and all that. How have that, has that worked for you guys?
Well, now it's not, again, it's not as big an issue.
Or, how did
it when work? When they were babies and toddlers, I had like a, I bought it at Pier One. I remember that clearly. And I think it was sold as like a shoe bench or something. You know, it was like one of those kind of low bench things that had like different cubbies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was out in our living room, and it was covered with toys. But I made sure I only put the toys on it that I would feel okay about being strewn around the room if company were to stop by. Mm-hmm. So it was stuff like the beautiful wooden wire roller coaster and like, you know, that kind of stuff. Things like things that were a little more easily contained, like big blocks and not, you know, tiny little piece things or, little, you know, little clothes. So that was kind of how we handled that. I wanted the toys to be more integrated because it made my life easier. We didn't have the kind of – we've really never had the kind of setup where the kids could just – we live in Michigan. We've always lived in older homes. And so there's just never really been that basement that could be like the run amok area.
Yeah, California does not have basements almost like across the board. So
And with so many kids, we've never had an extra room for it. So we've really had to integrate to some degree. And it just makes my life easier to know that I can be working in the living room and a kid can be playing on the floor next to me. But that was kind of our approach. It's funny though, when you start talking about systems, that's where I feel like I start to fall apart a little bit, because I've never really had a system besides, I've never had a consistent organizing system besides be vigilant.
Yeah.
And stay on your feet. That's really like, just do something, you know, pay attention, maintain, and do something every day to make your space a little bit better.
Yeah.
And sometimes that looks very, you know, sometimes that might be because I bought a certain thing that at IKEA or wherever, the container store, that just happened to work really great for my space. And that is always a surprise to me, because I feel like I've spent a lot of money on organizing containers and things over the years and been like, you know. But most of it is just action for me.
Yep. No, I agree. And we also have always had toys pretty much integrated. Our last house in Arizona had a loft upstairs that was a great playroom. But when the ages that our kids were when we were there, they weren't playing as much independently. They were really little. And it was upstairs when I was often downstairs. So I don't feel like it got used in the way that it might now, or that a basement would get used if your kids were a little older. But so I do have a couple specific tips. Number one is to have, and this kind of does come a little bit from KonMari method, is to have primarily one place where everything goes. So what I mean by that is, if you pick up a toy and ask your spouse or a kid, an older kid, where does this go? That there's pretty much only one answer. That doesn't mean that like oh, it could go in this bin. And I don't have like super labeled systems or like really rigid expectations. But for the most part, Legos go in this bin. Baby doll stuff is all gathered together in a Lakers room in a big bin. Now, does it make it to that place every time? No. And sometimes, like, the way Brian cleans up is, like, just to put everything in the nearest bin.
Right.
And, of course, that's, like, a fundamental, like, personality difference with us. But
didn't we realize that, like, you like, yes. I am Brian?
Yeah,
probably. I think we figured that out at one point, yeah.
He is able to declutter or pick up a room in like 20 seconds because he just puts everything in the nearest bin. I'm actually more likely to let the clutter sit for half a day or a day and a half until I can thoroughly put everything away. I don't think it's either or. I do think that as your kids get older and are able to help put things away, having everybody agree that this is the bin of plastic animals and that this is where they go. It allows you to expect a little bit more accountability from other people when you say put things away that really everybody knows. And the KonMari method, she was so big on having everything of a similar type only live in one place. Like you don't have some purses hanging by the door on a hook and other purses in your closet. You have all the bags, you know. So she was really extreme about that. But I do think that when I start to feel overtaken by what I call like miscellany, it's because I need to stop and think, okay, where do these things really belong? And maybe that's when it's time for like a minor overhaul where we decide, okay, all the baby doll stuff is going to go in Violet's room now, or it's all going to come downstairs because she plays so much with it. So that's one thing is to, for the most part, try and have items of a category really belong together in one place and have everybody know where that place is. Let's see what my next one was. This is one for upstairs and downstairs, or if you have a larger house. We have a couple baskets that are like basically lost and found or miscellany, but it's one per kid. And they're pretty baskets that are kind of hidden in a bookshelf. They don't look junky. You can't even see what's in them. But when I find things downstairs, like we're talking about the little, like the calico critter dishes that are tiny, if I wasn't sweeping them into the dustbin, I would put them in Allegra's lost and found basket. And then her chore would be whenever I decide, it's not like on a schedule, but to take that up to her room and put those things where they go. And that way I'm not trekking up and putting all this miscellaneous things. And also then if they ask me where something is, the first thing I say is check your basket. So it's like a cubby kind of, I guess.
Yeah, no, we had a very similar system. It's actually a funny story about that. Like when the kids were all littler and there was much more miscellany. For each specific kid.
Yeah.
We did that. They were all lined up at the bottom of the stairs and our stairs were behind a door. So people couldn't see that they were there and I could just open the door and chuck stuff in. And, I kind of fell out of the habit of doing that over the years just because it became less necessary. And we moved into a different house where like it was easier just to hand stuff to kids and have them take it up. And anyway, long story short, my mother-in-law one day said something like, oh, I was reading this article in Better Homes and Gardens the other day. And I read this really great tip about putting stuff in baskets and taking it upstairs. And then she's like, and then I realized that you wrote it. And I was like, oh. And then she said, but you don't do that. So it was like I totally got called out by my mother-in-law. But I had written the tip like 3 years earlier and it had just then made it into the magazine. Yeah. I was like, no, I don't do that anymore. But that's, you know, it's such a great example of how things can change.
Yeah.
So you don't have to get married to, if something's working for you, like this is, I feel like Sarah, this is like the drum we beat constantly, right? But something can be working for you now and can be the best thing in the world and can be great. And that doesn't mean in a year it's going to serve a purpose anymore. So you can let go of a technique or an idea as well, or try something new and see if it works better.
And I think those times when we start to feel frustrated or anxious or uncomfortable is the times when the opportunity is presenting itself to change up, you know, when things are no longer working.
I want to make another comment about having it have a place.
Okay.
I think sometimes, I live in an older house that has very little storage. Like the storage situation in this house is really wonky. And there, unless I was to just buy 8 million baskets and then I have a basket clutter problem, right? Like there really just isn't a place to put some things away. Some things are always going to be out. And an example of that, I love scarves. And I have like several light jackets that I wear when it's not really, you know, winter. I have my one heavy winter coat, but I have like several like lighter ones that I wear when the weather's nicer. And there's really just not a very good place to put them away. There's hooks at the very front of the house, but that's not convenient for me because that's never where I am when I'm getting dressed. It's like I just need them like in my bedroom, but I don't want them in my closet because there's not room in my closet, to make a long story short. So I have this chair in my bedroom. And for a while, I just found that I kept chucking stuff on that chair and I didn't like it. Like it felt like I wasn't putting things away.
Right.
But then I realized really it made the most sense for my light jackets and my scarves to go on that chair because it's really the place that's in front of me. I can see them laying out.
Yeah.
So now I just lay them really nicely.
Yeah.
On the chair.
No, you just change your mind that that's that is where they go.
It felt like a cop out and I kind of looked around. I was like, where else could they go? Could they go in the closet? Well, it's not gonna work. There's not really enough room. Could they go out front? No, that's not gonna work. It's inconvenient. Then I'm gonna be spending all this time like walking back and forth trying to figure out which scarf I want to wear. That's not gonna work. And I thought finally like and then, okay, I could buy something to put them in, but why would I do that? Like, why don't I just make it look nice?
Right.
And now I, instead of looking at that chair like a cast off or an afterthought, that is my like scarf and jacket chair.
Right.
And nobody really sits in that chair anyway. So that's fine. That's what it is. That's the purpose it serves. I think sometimes we can be a little more flexible about what put away means.
Agreed. Agreed. Here. I don't have anything to say to that except I just totally agree. And sometimes it's as simple as changing your definition of what is correct or what is acceptable.
Right. And what does put away mean?
Exactly.
I think we're expected to have these, like, for example, kitchens where nobody knows that we have anything in our kitchen. But unless you have a kitchen where you have huge amounts of storage where you can put away all your small appliances, stuff's going to be out. People are going to know that you use stuff.
There is something much more peaceful and satisfying about feeling like you've put something away. And all you have to do is decide that that's where it goes.
That's where it goes. It's already away.
So, okay. So here's another kind of specific tip. And that is if you have, I have a lot of bins and baskets, for toys in every room. And it does help, I think, to buy ones that look nice. And I've done that in different ways over the years. But the key with bins and baskets for me, whatever I decide goes in that one, is to not have them be overflowingly full. I think there's something really kind of frustrating and anxiety producing about some like cramming stuff in and then trying to get something out. And this goes for everything, the drawers that your clothes are in. So unless you really are bursting at the seams, truthfully, from a square footage perspective, try to give yourself the gift of containers that are not too full. Does that make sense? So like pick something where it's never going to be full to the brim. I think this is helpful for kids too. We have a dress up bin upstairs by their bedrooms with all the like hats and scarves, that kind of dress up stuff. And then I keep Halloween costumes, which are like bigger, you know, like full costumes. Yeah. In the garage, which we only get out for Halloween or if they really want to put on a play or something. And every once in a while, the costumey stuff will sneak upstairs and go in this dress up bin. And they have a harder time putting stuff away. I get so mad when I pull this bin out and it's like hats and wands are just sticking out. And it's just something more calming about a bin that has room in it. I don't know. Maybe this is like, sounds totally out to left field, but I think if you are doing organizing, you're planning where stuff's going to go, give yourself room, literally, like extra room for either for you to add more stuff on there or just to feel like you can go through it without it being spilling over the top. I think that's like a metaphor for life or something.
No, I completely agree. Okay, one thing that just popped into my head that I feel like I have to cover before we say adieu is that the reality of our lives as parents and moms and people with small people in our house is that there's always going to be like a pending.
Yes.
Pending.
Yes.
Stuff that's pending,
process. Yeah.
In process. And I feel like we need to plan for that and not have it feel like a failure or like like an afterthought. Because, okay, here's an example. I'm sitting at my desk right now and I'm looking at this. And this is something I'm not always great about because I feel like I should take care of things faster.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always within my control. So I have a picture that I've had on my wall forever. One of the kids knocked it off. The glass broke. Okay, well, for me to take care of this picture, I don't want to take it out of the broken frame until I have a new frame to replace it with. It's an odd size. I got to order it off Amazon. So that's step one. Step two is I'm going to have to take it outside and take the glass out safely. You know, so there's like all these things that have to happen before that can really be truly taken care of. And so there has to be a place for that. I mean, I can't just pretend like that stuff doesn't ever happen.
And you can't just do it now. Conventional advice.
No, I can't just do it now. Right.
Would say, well, just take care of it. If you can't take care of it right now, schedule it in your calendar or put it in. It's just not feasible all the time in these phases of our lives.
Exactly. So I have like a inbox on my desk that's really just a big pile of stuff that I haven't dealt with yet. And I feel good because it's in one place. Mm-hmm. I can tell when I start to when I start to get anxious is when that spills over and there's a second pile next to it, mm-hmm. and maybe I try to like jimmy a third pile, like going the other direction. You know,
and you start that's to when I forget know what's in that pile.
Like, right, that's when I know that's too many piles. But if you have a pile, that's okay. Like we don't, not everything. And sometimes I'm the kind of person, if I put something away, sometimes I forget about it. So I can't just put things out of sight because they will truly be out of mind. So like returns, like mm-hmm. I haven't printed out the return thing yet, and I haven't bothered to take it to the mailbox yet, or whatever. Those things need a place to go to, and those, and it's, that's life, right? Yeah. We all have those things. It's not like a failure because you haven't gotten that return in the mail yet, or you haven't taken that thing back to the store or fixed this or hung that or whatever. It's not always as simple as do it now.
Yeah. And just to be gentler with yourself about it. Like that is part of your decor. Like miscellany is part of your home.
Yes.
It's not a beast to be tamed all the time. Sometimes like you get the energy and you tame the beast, but the beast will come back.
The beast is always going to come back.
Well, I think we covered a lot. Again, thanks to Kate from San Francisco and your really sweet note. I hope we kind of addressed some of these things. You're not alone in wanting to curb the, what did you call it? A tidal wave, of crap.
We know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's all. That's all I got for now. All of this will be at themomhour.com. This is episode 35, and we will be.
Please leave a comment and let us know your struggles, though, and what you think about the KonMari method and all other.
Yeah.
If you have another organizing method that you like better or whatever, we'd love to hear it.
Yes, would love to. All right, thanks everybody. We will be back next week.
See ya.